information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight
we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law.
You will listen and obey.
The country.
You will remember nine you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Lied to by
the government. They were innocent. They have no idea what they're up against.
The brave youth will come far and wide when 9/11 is the battle cry. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 174th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 18th, 2010. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, news purge, old boys and new toys, debt crisis and the power of the purse, and movie future. Futures, Amy Bishop, firing squads, behavior modification, Oregon oddities, classified dolphins, two-faced kittens, unions, connections, vast riches, terror drills, the rehearsal of misfortune, drones over America, and the Kennedy files. All that and so much more. Power Pack, June 18th, 2010, episode 174 of MediaMonarchy.com.
So hard.
Brand new music from Delta Spirit. Their new record, History From Below. And that track is simply titled 9/11. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 174th episode of Media Monarchy. It's June 18th, 2010, and my name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And we're doing it from home. Portland Radio Authority is under construction, getting the place up to code. So we're doing the show from the home studios of MediaMonarchy.com here in Portland, Oregon. So we are recording in real time. And of course, all the affiliates that play the show will play this show. And I thank and love them all. Of course, Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, frolympia.org, berkeleyliberationradio.net, oneskyradio.com, phantomradio.org, cascadiapublicradio.org, and radio23.org. It's all about getting the message and getting the show and getting the open source intelligence and alternative news and information out to as many folks as possible. You can get in touch with me any number of ways, facebook.com/Media Monarchy, and on and on and on, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword or username, or .com/Media Monarchy. Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, ustream.tv/Media Monarchy, and we are, of course, streaming and recording videos. Some folks say it's hard to figure out where to send an email, but I say it at the top of every show, and now I have written it on the front page, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. We're also on Skype, Instant Messenger, and of course you can find this and all our shows on iTunes, radioforall.net, archive.org. We have t-shirts on cafepress.com/Media Monarchy. I want to thank my man Dudley in California for the most recent donation to Media Monarchy. The donate button right there on the top right of the page. Your support helps keep independent alternative media going. While supplies last, your $10 donation gets you the DVD from Richard Grove and PeaceRevolution.org, 2020 Hindsight. And one of those will be going out to Dudley in California. You can send media to the Monarchy, P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. And again, recording from home, you may notice differences. There may be sound levels, but we're trying to produce this show in as real time as possible so that when things happen and we're not able to be live, we can still do it as if we were live. And again, the more we use ustream.tv, the more this is always going to be kind of a live experience. We'll be able to start to coordinate and try and get folks in so we can even collaborate while we're live, broadcasting, podcasting, all around the world. As we always do, let's glance at the breaking news on this Friday, June 18th morning. Obama marks stimulus plan milestone. And of course, the World Cup rages on, all the bread and circus in the Coliseum of the 21st century to take your mind off of environmental, economic, spiritual, emotional, mental, all the attacks. And again, this is all connected. These stories are all connected. BP strong despite spill setback. The ongoing and ongoing environmental catastrophes. And what I'll say is that first, we welcome new and returning listeners. Everyone's welcome. We're nonpartisan here. We do our best to be objective, as objective as possible. both sides completely corrupt. And that's how they keep the game going. They prop each other up. One side's in, the other side's out. One side's asleep, the other side wakes up, and back and forth, and yet the agenda goes forward. The agenda that what we've seen through all our research goes back to those handfuls of names and families and corporations and societies and think tanks and roundtables that for the last several centuries at least have pretty much colluded with one another like gangsters and banksters to buy up all the real wealth and resources of the world and give us all the fake facsimiles, whether that's paper money or all the entertainment, all the shadows cast on the wall, like in Plato's cave. I do this to learn. I ain't the smartest guy in the world. I'll be the first to tell you that. But I've always been good at sifting through a lot of information and being able to remember a lot of information and hopefully do the data mining, do all of this searching and researching and archiving for you on MediaMonarchy.com. And the website is only half and the show is only half. You got to put them together and do more research on your own. Don't take my word for anything. I post up a lot of links, post a lot of stories, and again, always save your stories, save your video, save your audio. Treat the web as if it could be altered massively at any given moment. I guess I still think of it as if when Napster first happened and we all wanted to grab music, I still think of it that way. Not so much in downloading free music. And now, fortunately, a profit business model has kind of emerged. And it makes it even more important, again, to support artists and outlets that you enjoy. Digressing through all of this, I guess what I'm trying to say is, just because it's on the site doesn't mean that I endorse it or believe it. The site is a collection of media and information. And I don't have the time or space to always say, hey, I agree with this, or no, I don't agree with this, but I'm just posting it up for your perusal. I guess all this should go without saying, but every now and then I feel compelled to put it on the record. It's all open source. It's all fair use. It's all public domain, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not making any profit off of any of this, and I'm also not stealing anything, bootlegging, copying things. I provide all the links. I provide all the documentation. It's all laid out for you. So having said all that, my friends, there is so much to go over this week on episode 174 of MediaMonarchy.com. So we're going to start it with the news purge. 617 news purge. All the old boys said. And that is taken from our opening song from Delta Spirit, as was our opening quote. The brave youth will come far and wide when 9/11 is the battle cry. So we're going to grab all the latest 9/11 updates, this first of which we did touch on the latest New World Next Week episode with CorbettReport.com. The SEC says government destroyed documents regarding pre-9/11 put options. And we jump all the way back to September 19th, 2001, where CBS reported that sources told CBS News that the afternoon before 9/11, alarm bells were sounding over unusual trading in the U.S. stock options market. An extraordinary number of trades were betting that American Airlines stock prices would fall. The trades are called puts, and they involve at least 450,000 shares of American. But what raised the red flag is more than 80% of the orders were puts, far outnumbering call options, those betting the stock would rise, meaning everybody bet the stock was going to drop. There's more from the San Francisco Chronicle. But what this is about And in a way, I wondered if Washington's blog kind of buried the lead here. This is a new story because, well, first, as we just briefly noted there, the effort to track down the source of these puts was quite substantial. And what were the results of that investigation? Apparently, we'll never know. Specifically, what is new? News right here. David Callahan, executive editor of Smart CEO, submitted a Freedom of Information Act request to the Securities and Exchange Commission regarding the pre-9/11 put options. The SEC responded, and the page is viewable on maxkaiser.com, saying, quote, "This letter is in response to your request seeking access to and copies of the documentary evidence referred to in footnote 130 of Chapter 5 of the September 11th 9/11 Commission report. We have been advised that the potentially responsive records have been destroyed." Have been destroyed. Now, we can, of course, say if there were proprietary information they didn't want to let out, that'd be one thing. There could be a few rational reasons for maybe not letting all of the information come out. But they can't because they destroyed it. So many parallels between 9/11 and JFK, like destroying the notes of all the interviews with Oswald. But that's neither, well, it is here and there. But we're not going to get into that right now. What's interesting about this is only last month we reported that the SEC finds no sign 9/11 conspirators bet on attacks. Because, of course, the wolf or the fox or whatever animal in the other animal's house analogy you like, wolf in sheep's clothing, fox in the hen house, the SEC investigating itself. SEC found no signs 9/11 conspirators bet on attacks. And now we find out documents were destroyed. Well, how do you know? We'll, of course, mention historycommons.org, their complete 9/11 timeline, linked up for you in the New World Next Week show notes, goes directly to their insider trading foreknowledge section. Those are the things for me that get more to the heart of what really 9/11 was about, and that's the insider trading, the geopolitical connections, the intelligence fingerprints, the drills and the war games, all those things, not just the buildings look like they were blown up. There's more to it than that. Relating to the SEC and insider trading pre-9/11, one more. 9/11 blogger asking the question, did 9/11 provide cover for massive securities fraud by the Federal Reserve? But now we have the new Prime Minister in the UK. Of course, Gordon New World Order Brown is out. But now we have David Cameron. And he, of course, is all in line with the war of terror. But let's hear exactly why.
And it's worth remembering why we're here, why we're fighting, what this is all about. This is not a war of choice, it is a war of necessity. This is not a war of occupation, it's a war of obligation. On 9/11, when the Twin Towers were blown up, and so many British people died, as well as Americans, almost every single person that took part in that attack was trained here in Afghanistan by Al-Qaeda. That's why we came here. That's why we cleared away those training camps. And if we left tomorrow, those training camps could come back tomorrow.
So many just half-truths in there. So what did Cameron just say? You know, because on 9/11, when the Twin Towers were blown up, could just be a figure of speech. But it's always interesting to watch the language and how, even when people are somewhat casually referring to it, they say, oh yeah, it was blown up. Op-ed News gets into increasing threats to the 9/11 truth movement, of course citing the cognitive infiltration called for by Obama's new info czar, Cass Sunstein, infiltrating conspiracy theory groups. And lastly on our 9/11 updates, a fascinating bizarre little story, as so many of these are. A lot of strange folks doing a lot of strange things for a lot of strange reasons. U.S. man hunting bin Laden held in Pakistan. That's from Fox News. And we've also got Danger Room as well as Raw Story. Gary Brooks Faulkner, Osama hunter, only the latest terror fighting wannabe. But right now, from Raw Replay and Raw Story, the clip of Gary Brooks Faulkner's brother saying he had a pretty good chance of getting Osama.
Now to new developments in the stunning arrest of a Colorado man in Pakistan. Gary Brooks Faulkner was detained on Monday as he tried to cross the border into Afghanistan armed with a pistol, a sword, and night vision equipment. He told police he was on a mission to hunt down Osama bin Laden. His brother, Dr. Scott Faulkner, knew all about the plan and calls his brother a hero. Dr. Faulkner, good morning.
Good morning, ma'am.
Well, you know, the average American wouldn't go across into Pakistan and spend basically 7 years of his life trying to hunt down Osama bin Laden. What can you tell us about his brother, and what would compel him to do this?
Well, Gary is not your average American. He's very passionate. He's a patriot. And after the Twin Towers came down in New York City, something stirred deep in his soul, and he felt that Osama needed to come to justice. And so that's what motivated him for over 7 years, almost 10 years now, to bring this man who was wanted by the U.S. government to justice.
Maybe he just took Morgan Spurlock's "Where in the World is Osama bin Laden" a little too close to heart. I'm sure we'll hear more about that, but there are also, as we get into this episode, a lot of other strange incidents, strange folks, sinister forces. But let's get a couple drug war updates. Colorado pot advocates plan legalization, a push for 2012. That's from News Junkie Post. Always kind of following drug war updates on News Junkie Post. An op-ed from John Stossel on Fox News, time to stop fighting the drug war. And there he is correct. I believe I also just saw on Google News for this morning, let's scroll and find it, in my Oregon subheadings, Oregon officially recognizes marijuana for medical value. This is 2 hours ago from KVAL. Oregon just downgraded marijuana from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2. That, my friends, as Bill Hicks would say, is a positive drug story. But unfortunately, now it's time for all the Econo Crash updates. We're now a year and a half into at least the public destruction and the public's at least somewhat awareness of the new financial world order. Soros, of course, saying it's Act Two now. I believe Tarpley saying this isn't going to be one of your modern three-act stories. This is an epic Shakespearean five-act drama, again, as Soros called this, the drama. But first from Reuters, Fed dodges bullet as House drops audit idea. See, it was just an idea. And it was Ron Paul's H.R. 1207 bill, I believe, that was going to really get it started. And then you had other fools like Barney, fake progressive Frank, meddling. Fed dodges bullet as House drops audit idea. Federal Reserve scored a political victory Wednesday as Democrats mulling financial reform backed off measures that would expose monetary policy to audits and make the head of the New York Fed a political appointee. The U.S. House of Representatives had approved a bill in December that included a provision championed by Texas Representative Ron Paul that would have opened the Fed's interest rate policy to congressional audits. But in a statement on Tuesday, House Democrats participating in negotiations over a final financial reform bill signaled a willingness to live with a narrower Senate audit provision that does not cover monetary policy. Give me control of a nation's money supply, and I care not who makes the laws. Isn't that one of the Rothschilds boys? Back in the day, still running the same game? Federal Reserve is neither. New claims for jobless benefits rise sharply. That's from early this morning on this June 18th from the Associated Press. European debt crisis. Moody's cuts Greece government ratings to junk. That's from CNBC. BP's biggest shareholder is, surprise, surprise, JP Morgan. More on that from allgov.com. And of course, all the latest poison spill BP updates coming up in just a little bit. Again from Reuters, Israel's leader capital markets CEO commits suicide. Antidepressant use rises in UK as recession feeds waves of worry. That's from The Guardian. And our last econo crash note, we're going to grab just a moment from the new documentary from Lee Rogers of RogueGovernment.com, and it's called Power of the Purse.
The Knights Templar, otherwise known as the Order of the Temple of Solomon, were a powerful economic and military order formed by French noblemen during the aftermath of the First Crusade. On the surface, the Templar were set up for the purpose of protecting Christian pilgrims in their journey to the Holy Land. They quickly grew favor amongst Christians and were eventually given a mandate by the Roman Catholic Church of fulfilling this very task. Members of the Templar were required first to participate in secretive initiation rituals and vow themselves to a life of chastity and poverty. Although the order itself forbid its members from obtaining great wealth, there was no such rule for the order itself. The Templar were considered a charitable organization by many European nations and were granted tax-exempt status, much like non-profit organizations today. Their tax-exempt status and their military might eventually allowed the Templar to accumulate a tremendous amount of wealth. The Templar provided services for the safe transport of valuables for Christian pilgrims. Pilgrims would visit a Templar house, depositing their valuables, and in exchange they would receive a letter describing their holders. During their travels, the pilgrims could withdraw funds from other Templar houses. This system is similar to the type of check system that is in use today, and many historians credit the Templar for originating this very system. The Templar soon began loaning money and even provided loans to noblemen and kings using loopholes to avoid the church's ban on usury. For example, the Templar would charge mortgage holders rent and charge fees for financial services rendered instead of interest. Essentially, the Templar established the first international banking system through their military power and backing by the Roman Catholic Church. Templar banking houses were found everywhere in Europe, and their military was allowed to pass over national borders with no restriction. They were a nation unto themselves that existed within many other countries.
Now, I am looking forward to seeing that whole documentary, The Power of the Purse, Volume 1, from Lee Rogers of RogueGovernment.com. And, of course, we'll always mention probably one of the best documentaries about money is The Money Masters. And, again, we'll quite simply say, take your money out of the banks, at least out of the big banks. Go to a credit union. Fortunately, there are credit unions here in Portland. That's what I have my account set up through. And that's the simple truth. If we just take the power away from them, they make 10 bucks off every dollar you give them, and they throw you crumbs and nickels, and you're supposed to be happy with it. Let's shift now to geopolitics, and I believe we mentioned it briefly last week, but we've got updates from The Guardian and CNN and more. Kyrgyzstan declares state of emergency. We had around 300,000 people displaced inside Kyrgyzstan. That's from yesterday, Guardian reporting. And the latest I have, and the clip that we're going to briefly hear, is unfortunately probably horribly outdated now. On the Kyrgyzstan carnage, 700 feared dead as looting and riots surge.
An official death toll of 170 and tens of thousands fleeing the country. Southern Kyrgyzstan is facing an humanitarian crisis as ethnic Uzbeks desperately try to escape the violence that's been targeted against them. The UN Security Council says a corridor of aid into the country must be quickly established as help is urgently needed. RT's Peter Oliver has the latest from the capital, Bishkek.
We're now looking at an official death toll of 100. 170. That's risen by over 30 overnight. And we're really seeing this over the past 24 hours. We've seen more and more sporadic fighting, as I say, than the wide-scale looting and rioting. But we are hearing from Uzbek sources that they expect to hear this, see this death toll rise over the next coming days. Some suggesting even as high as 700. There's also many, many people who have been injured and wounded in this fighting, some with bullet wounds, some with gunshot wounds and wounds from shrapnel injuries. We're also looking at the UN trying to set up a humanitarian corridor to the south, through the south, to make sure that they can get aid to those people that need it most. We've actually just seen the UN representative here head off to a meeting where I suppose they're going to be discussing how they can go about establishing that humanitarian corridor. The Red Cross has pledged $8.7 million to try and help the aid relief effort here in Kyrgyzstan, in the south of the country, in Jalalabad and in Osh. Well, refugees from that southern region have been flooding across the border into Uzbekistan. Now, it's hard to put an actual figure on just how many refugees have been heading into Uzbekistan, because the estimates put it somewhere between around 75,000 and 100,000. Now, there's such a ballpark figure on that because the majority of the people who are crossing over the border are women. Most of those women have with them between 2 and 3 children, and children under the age of 18, the majority of them have no documents for which to be able to be registered to see how many people are actually in these camps. And now we have a situation whereby camps are actually running out of space very, very quickly for places to be able to put people who are trying to escape from violence in Osh and in Jalalabad.
So they had it at 700 feared dead. I just now glanced at the most recent news. They're saying brace for 2,000, and we shall see what goes down in Kyrgyzstan. North Korea denies sinking South ship in a letter to the United Nations. That's up from Reuters. And again, this ties into the possible false flag event of the sinking of the Chinon and the Korean standoff. The other story still going, Italian flotilla journalists' credit card was used after the IDF confiscated it. More fine work from the IDF. Poles arrest alleged Mossad agent in Dubai killing. That's from Raw Story. UNESCO gives award named for one of world's worst dictators. And that would be General... No. Teodoro Obiang Nguema of Equatorial Guinea. And of course, butchering the names, unfortunately, but again, allgov.com covers UNESCO giving award named after a dictator. You may recall several months ago we interviewed the editor-in-chief of allgov.com, David Walachinsky. He is a noted expert and author on the world's worst dictators. And if you hit the link to this story, you'll see a nice photo of Obama and Michelle with Obiang. Like a nice, big, happy family. Two more updates from Charlie Skelton over on The Guardian on the recent Bilderberg meeting, of course, where the oligarchs get together to decide our future. And again, if you had a bunch of football players or a bunch of celebrities all try and get away hidden, you would have the media falling all over themselves to infiltrate this meeting. And they would be able to do it, too, because they would want it. But somehow when you have the most powerful and some of the most powerful folks in the world plotting our future, our demise and their rise in their eyes, no one's interested. I believe I did see that Bilderberg even started a website. And again, all of this coverage of Bilderberg is because the alternative media has forced the issue out into the open. There is no doubt about that. But we're going to get into the latest media and memes with an amazing one from the Wall Street Journal. We covered this a few weeks ago when the discussion was in the air, but now Movie Futures Plan is approved. Federal regulators on Monday greenlighted a plan by one exchange to list movie futures, despite a push by some Hollywood groups and lawmakers to ban the products. A divided Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CFTC, voted 3-2 to approve movie futures, contracts tied to box office receipts for Trend Exchange, a trading platform owned by Variana Networks. A vote on a similar type of contract for the Cantor Fitzgerald-owned Cantor Exchange is expected later this month. In making this determination, the commission found that the contracts are based on commodities, are not readily susceptible to manipulation, and serve an economic hedging purpose, the agency said in a notice approving the contracts. Despite this major victory for the Trend Exchange, the CFTC's blessing may not be enough to keep Trend Exchange plans alive. The financial overhaul bill being negotiated this week by lawmakers contains a provision that would make movie futures illegal. Although a similar provision didn't exist in the U.S. House version of the bill, several House lawmakers who oppose the contracts are on the committee negotiating a final piece of legislation. I was discussing this with a coworker, and what we both easily agreed on is that we don't anticipate this leading to any major quality increase in the products coming from Hollywood. Movie futures, another debt bubble to create. And again, all this is going to bring us is more of the same crap that they're already shoving down your throat. And again, it's very easy. Just don't go give your money for bullshit sequels and squeakles and remakes and TV shows and video games and 80s nostalgia and all that garbage. And basically because they still own the rights to it, so it doesn't cost them as much to just reboot it, as the kids like to say. Just don't look is what I would recommend. Unlike other studios, Paramount is going to allow Redbox to rent its DVDs the day they are released. More on that from Variety. An interesting one and an important one on counterpunch.org, the World Cup as maximum weapon of social control. Now, the aforementioned coworker talking about movie futures, we also had a brief moment on sports where I basically have to say anytime anybody asks me if I like sports, I say no, I think it's a waste of time, it's a bread and circus, it's a fake catharsis, it's a fake group activity to make you feel like you're part of something, make you feel like you're doing something, but it's fake, ultimately. And we align ourselves with all these little fake teams, and we wear our shirts, and we wear our jerseys, and again, give more money to these fools that then we say, oh, those guys are overpaid, with your Yankees cap on. But I digress. Our last note on media memes, 66% of voters are angry at the media. This is the latest from RasmussenReports.com. 66% of U.S. voters describe themselves as at least somewhat angry at the media, including 33% who are very angry. Now, what they'll twist very angry into meaning, I guess we're going to have to wait and see. And now it's on to all the latest ugly murder and mayhem updates. And there is kind of a large update on someone you may remember from several months ago, Amy Bishop, former professor, inventor, charged in brother's death that happened 24 years ago. So these updates coming from CNN and from Reuters. Accused Alabama college shooter charged in 86 deaths. So basically Amy Bishop, Alabama professor. She went on a shooting spree there. She appears to have all the fingerprints of some kind of intelligence op of a damaged individual with interesting connections to the intelligence networks and private military contracting and high technology. Let's break it down. We'll get you updated and get the flashback on the strange case of Amy Bishop.
Today, the grand jury has indicted Amy Bishop for the murder in the first degree of her brother, Seth Bishop. This is an indictment. It is not a trial. So the presumption of innocence still is maintained by the defendant. An indictment warrant has also been issued and lodged as a detainer in Alabama so that she would be detained if indeed there's a situation where her release would have been imminent. But as you know, she's now awaiting three counts of murder and assault and battery with a dangerous weapon with three other colleagues that she worked with at the University of Alabama in Huntsville.
Let's talk about Amy Bishop Anderson. She shot and killed her brother in Massachusetts, 20 years ago. It was called an accident at the time. What have you learned about that case?
Well, you know, it's fascinating. Just in the last few days since the horrible tragedy in Huntsville, police up here near Boston have now dredged up this case from 1986. And it was supposed to be an accidental shooting of her brother, but now police here are raising questions about whether that case was handled properly.
What do you mean by questions being raised here? What kinds of questions? It sounds like there was an investigation, and the investigation included that the shooting was accidental. So what are the new questions?
Well, there's a couple of very serious problems with that, and one is that the police report from the initial incident is somehow missing. And the police chief himself in the town where she grew up, it's a little town called Braintree, said, hey, this shouldn't have happened this way.
Mm-hmm. Well, police reports don't go missing. What are you finding out, Donovan? What do you learn?
Well, they're now opening an investigation into what happened to this police report. A separate report from the prosecutors in the case did rule it accidental. But there's a couple of really troubling factors, questions that are out there. One is that she supposedly shot her brother in their home. And it was an accident, but then she ran outside, according to police now, and pointed the gun at someone else in an attempt to get a getaway car. Now, that part of the case was not ruled an accident by the DA. We don't even know if it was investigated.
So the second part was the backstory, and the first part was the update. And again, we provide the flashback for you. The Amy Bishop story was happening right around the Joe Stack story, the guy who crashed the plane into the IRS building, who, of course, had all kinds of intelligence connections and shared a hangar with Homeland Security. And again, all these things that are too ridiculous to be coincidental, and we don't buy the coincidence theory of history or modern history. There are conspiracies. That word's a double-edged sword, of course. But all it means is at least two people getting together, deciding to commit a crime. And it gets stranger through the murder and mayhem. Body in Ottawa River, likely scientists. That would be another missing, suicided scientist. As this keeps coming up, we always just remind you, Google dead microbiologists, dead missing scientists, and you wonder what the hell is going on. We now know it's happened, and we do have the update for you, but we'll give you the background first. Inmate in Utah, executed by firing squad.
Take a look at this. These are the actual pictures of this room in Utah where Ronnie Gardner will be put to death after midnight on Friday. And these are the pictures that were shared by the Department of Corrections. Apparently the sandbags. The sandbags are there to make sure there's no, to prevent any debris. I'm just glancing at my notes specifically. And also there's a picture with, if we can keep going through the pictures, there's a picture with black rectangles on the wall. If we can get to that one. And there they are. So those are actually the windows where the five-member firing squad stands behind that. That's where they place their rifles and execute this man. The state parole board denied Gardner clemency today. He is convicted for the 1985 murder of an attorney during an escape attempt at the courthouse in Salt Lake City. By the way, here's a little background. The firing squad option no longer available in the state of Utah to death row inmates. It's actually the last state actually allowing the firing squad. But here's the deal. This is why Gardner is getting this. Gardner's case grandfathered. It was grandfathered in before the law changed 6 years ago in 2004. The last time someone was put to death in Utah by firing squad in 96. There's also, though, a more famous case right after the Supreme Court of the United States reinstated capital punishment. That was Gary Gilmore, who was executed by firing squad in 1977. Sort of the famous line as he was about to be executed, that let's do it. And Norman Mailer, a famous author, won the Pulitzer Prize for his book about Gilmore called The Executioner's Song. But making news because still here in 2010, firing squad happening.
At least they should do it outside. I mean, just something about that is gross.
I don't know.
Got to clean that all up.
Indeed. And they've now done it. And quite an interesting report there. Added in all the other media, pop culture, historical references that I would do for you. Four found dead at Massachusetts home in a horrific scene. More on that from the Associated Press, from Copycat Effect and Lauren Coleman, Real Killer Clowns. And it gets even more bizarre. On a plane from Little Rock to Fort Worth, it's heads on a plane.
Strange as it may seem, it's not unusual for any airline to ship bodies or even body parts for medical research. In Little Rock, Southwest Airlines says a courier showed up with a package to fly to Texas but claimed not to know what was inside. The Southwest employee looked and found 40 to 60 human heads. The airline called police, who turned the package over to the county coroner, who has plenty of questions.
We've all come to the conclusion that there is a black market out there for human body parts, for research, or for whatever reason. We just want to make sure these specimens here aren't a part of that black market and underground trade.
The heads were being shipped to this building on North Beach Street in Fort Worth to Medtronic, a leading medical research and technology company. The company says it, too, is now asking questions of its supplier, JLS Consulting. According to Arkansas Records, its business license was revoked in December. It was founded by Janice Hepler. Here she is on the website of another company she runs that arranges for anatomical gifts. So far, we've been unable to reach Hepler. But in an interview with the Arkansas Democrat-Gazette newspaper, she blamed the problem on a courier. Nothing is wrong, the newspaper quoted her as saying, we're providing the documentation.
We're just providing a service. And of course, as you just said there, we know that organ harvesting and organ trafficking is a real thing, and we've covered it from time to time on MediaMonarchy.com. Of course, it happens somewhat pretty much in the open in China, with, of course, all their eugenics operations pushed by the thanks of folks like Kissinger and Poppy Bush and others. Our last note on the murder and mayhem, we, of course, had a William Bennett update last week. We've got another one this week. MediaMonarchy.com is your source for all the entire story over the last year of the murder of William Bennett, ex-CIA contractor involved in the faulty mapping and the supposedly mistaken bombing of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade. He was randomly killed while on a jog on March 22nd of 2009, 322. They're basically indicting and putting some gang kids on trial. And maybe this is the way the story really went, but it just makes my spidey sense tingle. So we always follow the updates on William Bennett, who indicted in fatal Loudoun attack. And now it's time for the latest Obamasiya updates. First from CNN, language guru says Obama speech too professorial. Basically, you're too dumb to understand. The adults have it under control. Don't worry. Go outside and play while we take care of grown-up business. But again, this is another thing of saying, oh, you know, the Democrats, they're always too boring and professorial. They're the front men. But what was really in this speech that centered around, of course, the BP Gulf oil spill, Obama pushing more carbon tax action in the Oval Office speech. And again, even if you believe in man-made global warming, what is paying carbon indulgences to the Rockefellers and JP Morgan Chase and Al Gore and Goldman Sachs and all of the same folks who cause all the problems that are positioned to benefit problem, reaction, solution? be the change you want to see in the world. That's pretty much what all this comes down to. And again, time and time we've said all the fascinating changes that have taken place over the last year and a half, and even more as we went through the campaign, as we've, again, shifted from this fake conservative George Bush puppet garbage war of terror, get him over there, Halliburton, Cheney, and all that. We've now morphed into Obama and the new financial world order, the greenwashing, and the cyberspace wars, all of those things now coming into play massively. Future shock. And again, all these guys, they've written all about it. They write all about it. But like Alan Dulles says, Americans don't read. National Prevention, Health Promotion, and Public Health Council. That would be Obama's new executive order mandating, quote, lifestyle behavior modification. Yeah, you think Kissinger and the boys only wanted that for China? That was the test model. It's all always been meant for us. Worse on whistleblowers. Obama administration hardens stance against leaks to the press. That's from the New York Times. And as of Goats and Men points out in this article in the New York Times, there's an NSA insider that says, quote, the place is almost completely corrupted. Yet another anti-Obama billboard pops up, this time in Arizona. That's our photo posted up for you. Who will pay the piper with Obama on a $100 trillion note? And lastly, not necessarily connected to the Obama saga, but it all concerns the cabinet of criminals and the apostles of war. And that fundamental question that we always come back to when we talk about all these elections and good folks that are trying to do good things in Congress and in Senate, and especially on your local level, because that's really where the action is. They like to get us to pay attention to the big WWF show, but meanwhile, closer decisions are being made that are going to affect you much more strongly. The question, what difference does it make if the vote's rigged?
Vic Rawl has today formally protested the results of the Democratic primary election that produced the upset winner, his opponent Alvin Green. But our third story on the countdown, the focus is quickly turning from Mr. Green to the legitimacy of South Carolina's voting system. Mr. Rawl will join us in a moment. Mr. Green's candidacy, including its legitimacy, still under scrutiny, however, by a government watchdog. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics is preparing an FEC complaint against Mr. Green because he did not file FEC reports, while Democrats in South Carolina still seek a convincing answer as to how Mr. Green came to be a candidate for the U.S. Senate in the first place. South Carolina State Representative Todd Rutherford met with Green and said he had difficulty answering questions. To quote Mr. Rutherford, if someone paid him to do this, they certainly exploited someone who was vulnerable. It is not even funny, it's just sad. But another Democratic State Representative, Bakari Sellers, says he believes Green is sincere. According to Sellers, I don't think he's a plant. I think he's just kind of doesn't know what he's getting into. The election has also gotten the attention of the Obama administration. White House senior advisor David Axelrod was asked if he thought Mr. Green is a legitimate candidate.
It doesn't appear so to me. I mean, it was a mysterious deal. He didn't campaign. He had no campaign funds. The whole thing is odd, and I don't really know how to explain it, and I don't think anybody else does either.
Mr. Rawl's formal protest with the State Democratic Party follows his campaign's unofficial review, still underway, of the election results, with experts already noting multiple irregularities. Mr. Rawl's campaign has also received numerous complaints from voters who experience problems with the touchscreen voting machines. For instance, people who say they repeatedly pressed the screen for Mr. Rawl but saw Mr. Green's name appear instead.
So again, the fundamental question, what difference does any of this make if our elections are rigged? Interestingly enough, a breaking update for you, as we just covered the Utah execution by firing squad. 23 minutes ago, Twitter execution comment causes controversy. Comments about the execution of a prisoner, quote, I just gave the go-ahead, end quote, by Utah's attorney general on Twitter this morning, June 18th, were generating lots of comments by others on Twitter and in the world of social media. I just gave the go-ahead. Our last few things to go over on this massive June 17th news purge. All the old boys said, let's get a couple Oregon oddities. And again, my friends, strangely enough, we covered this last week on episode 173, the strange case of false identification and fake identification, where we have the story of one of the guys that works for the all-powerful OLCC here in Oregon, the liquor control guy, using the ID of an Ohio boy that was murdered 20 years ago. And all the bizarre connections there, it pops up again. Taking it from our own Oregonian, former COIN TV news director, that's K-O-I-N, former COIN news director Jeff Allen Brent reaches plea deal, faces prison time. Jeff Allen Brent, the former COIN 6 news director who spent the last 24 years living under a false identity, pleaded guilty this last Monday to 3 felony charges. The guilty pleas, 2 of which revised earlier pleas of not guilty, were to federal charges of knowingly using an incorrect Social Security number and making false statements to a federally insured bank. The third charge, made in a U.S. attorney's filing on Friday, involved wire fraud conducted against the Oregon Employment Department between 08 and 10, during which Brent filed weekly documents claiming to be unemployed while also being paid as a contract employee for the Cascade Policy Institute and the North Dakota-based Franklin Center for Government and Public Integrity. This is a massive story. The Oregonian on OregonLive.com has 3-part story, all the Jeff Allen coverage. And again, that's what we do on Media Monarchy, is we follow the memes and we follow the stories and the semiology and the signs. And truth is stranger than fiction, my friends. The other Oregon note is a much more unfortunate one. Dive teams involved in search for missing boy. This has now been going on for the last couple of weeks. Looking for Kyron Horman, who's now been missing, I believe, 2 weeks now. And then we shift gears into the War Horse. And you gotta see the photo. I haven't seen the video. Petraeus faints during grilling over U.S. in Afghanistan, as he should. We get the link from The Guardian and posted up the photo of everyone jumping up to make sure that Petraeus is okay. I'm sure he probably just got lightheaded over the lies and garbage he was talking about. And we're going to touch on him again in just a little bit. But our other War Horse notes, McChrystal Meth faces massive failure in Afghanistan in the next few months. That's from Alternet. 211 bodies misplaced and misidentified at Arlington Cemetery. And it's the animal memes. Kitty cams, briefcase drones at special ops conference. Of course, this coming from Danger Room, Sharon Weinberger. One of the main contributors there on Danger Room is at this special ops conference, and there are other conferences going on. Of course, public-private, as we mentioned on our latest Cyberspace War updates on the B-side we just did. Public-private. The corporations and the state. In commie countries, state takes over the corporations, but in fascist nations, corporations take over the state, and ultimately the end result is the same goddamn thing. We covered Day of the Dolphins a few weeks ago when we were covering all those massive terror drills going on back, I believe, in April. Dolphins being used, and then we of course tied in the sinister forces of Roman Polanski working on a film called Day of the Dolphins. He was going to be the director. Ultimately, he quit the project because as he was scouting locations for Day of the Dolphins, a film about training dolphins that would ultimately be co-opted by rogue elements within the military-industrial complex to assassinate a president, that's when the Manson family murders happened. Again, sinister forces is pretty much the best term we can use to describe this. But here you go, again, an update. 80 dolphins work classified missions for the United States Navy.
We're actually at the Joint Expeditionary Base at Little Creek, and what we're involved in is an exercise called Frontier Sentinel, a sort of a maritime homeland security exercise, essentially looking for mines. We have a substantial amount of different forces, Canadian forces, U.S. naval forces, Coast Guard forces, and one of the things that we brought to the table is the Navy's marine mammal mine hunters. The premise is that some evil doers have placed some explosive devices somewhere here in the channel in the harbor around Little Creek, and their job with other mine hunting forces will be to find those simulated pretend practice mines. It does provide the United States Navy, in fact, the only capability anywhere in the world to find buried mines.
We work with them every day, and you feel their body language, and then you know when they're, you know, they're motivated, they're not, they're happy, they're sad. It's like a human being, so you, of course you build a relationship.
Swimmer defense dolphins, which look for divers, were actually used very effectively in Vietnam in 1970 and 71. And we used the mine hunting dolphins in Iraq at the start of Operation Iraqi Freedom to clear the harbor of Umm Qasr so the humanitarian aid ship HMS Sir Galahad could come into the harbor. The program spends about $20 million a year or so with 110 animals or so. You spend about $1 million training the animal. Very valuable assets, no doubt about that.
Eighty dolphins were classified missions for the U.S. Navy. And as if that wasn't strange enough for you, my friends, our last note on this massive 617 news purge, all the old boys said it's a little bit of West Virginia worry, but it's still keeping with the strange animal meme, kitten born with two faces in West Virginia.
Mama cat Isabella gave birth to six kittens, but has seven mouths to feed. So look at this litter, it's hard to tell anything's not right. But one of the kittens looks very different from his brothers and sisters. He was born with two faces. He has four eyes, two noses, and two mouths, all on one body, and he nurses with either mouth. His owners have named him what else but Two-Face. This unusual birth defect happens very rarely in animals, and most don't survive, but so far Two-Face is thriving and beating the odds. Myra Lopez, The Associated Press.
I don't really know what to say about all that. I first saw that story, and it was interesting enough as it was, but then, of course, like a lot of stories, when I see that it's from my home state of West Virginia, it always makes me kind of hang my head. Why does West Virginia need mutants getting all kinds of news? Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're now into hour number two of episode 174 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's June 18th, 2010, and my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. We are recording from home in the home studios of Media Monarchy here in Portland, Oregon, as praradio.org is under some well-needed construction, keeping us up to date. So I wasn't able to do the live show at the PRA this week. But of course, as always, this show is available from all the fine affiliates like praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, cascadiapublicradio.org, frolympia.org, radio23.org, and so many more. Huge thanks. And again, Radio 23 provides the high-quality feeds of Media Monarchy to get the 192-kilobit version of the show suitable for rebroadcast. If you've got a micro station, a pirate station, internet station, community, non-commercial, whatever you got, you don't have to ask. Just play the show. Again, this is all open-source intelligence, public domain. It's all out there for you. Get in touch with me any number of ways. Share information, send me news tips, all those things. Keep this whole contract going. So before our break there, we touched on the disturbing two-faced kitten born in West Virginia. But the West Virginia worries don't end there, as we're going to get an update on the Massey coal mine explosion that happened back at the beginning of April, where 29 men were killed in Montcoal, West Virginia. the worst mining accident in the last 40 years. I'll tell you right now, and I'll probably remind you again of the flashbacks to our original story again back in April, 29 killed in Massey coal mine explosion. And the tie-in with this is our fantastic interview with Reverend Billy on Mountaintop Revival, revbilly.com. But the two updates that we're going to hit right now, first, crack found in floor of West Virginia mine where 29 died. Now that they're getting in and checking it all out, of course, just like in the BP situation, and again, just like these stories are all intimately connected, both overtly and covertly, implicitly and explicitly, exoteric and esoterically. Union and families sue to open federal probe into West Virginia coal mine explosion just a few weeks before the April 20th explosion on BP's Deepwater Horizon rig in the Gulf. 29 coal miners died after an explosion at Massey Energy's Upper Big Branch mine in West Virginia. Although the Mine Safety and Health Administration has launched an investigation into the disaster, unlike the open federal investigation into the British Petroleum oil spill, the probe into Massey is taking place entirely behind closed doors. The United Mine Workers of America and families of victims killed in the West Virginia coal mine explosion recently filed suit in federal court to open up the federal investigation.
Let's move from worker safety from the spill to West Virginia.
Well, we're going now to another environmental disaster and human tragedy that took place just a few weeks before the explosion on BP's Deepwater Horizon rig in the Gulf. On April 5th, 29 coal miners died after an explosion at Massey Energy's Upper Big Branch mine in West Virginia. Although the Mine Safety and Health Administration has launched an investigation into the disaster, unlike the open federal investigation into the BP oil spill, the probe into Massey is taking place entirely behind closed doors. In the case of the Gulf oil spill, officials from BP, Transocean, and Halliburton have testified in public. Their interviews broadcast live on the internet, but interviews in the Massey probe have been conducted in private, and transcripts are not expected to be released for months.
The United Mine Workers of America and families of victims killed in the West Virginia coal mine explosion recently filed suit in federal court to open up the federal investigation. For more on this comparison between the two major disasters, we're joined here in New York by Jeff Biggers. He covers mining issues in Appalachia. He's the author of Reckoning at Eagle Creek, The Secret Legacy of Coal in the Heartland. Comes from generations of coal mining families. Talk about the latest with Massey. It has been, to say the least, to think that Blankenship, the CEO of Massey, has been saved by Hayward is astounding right now.
It's totally astounding, and I think your last clip on BP is very important because we're not only seeing an energy policy based on crisis management or mismanagement, we're really seeing a corporate culture of corruption that is being covered up by our government right now. And then I think the fact that we're having these behind-closed-doors investigation of the Massey disaster is really emblematic of ultimately a thinly-veiled cover-up that's happening. This is the situation, Amy and Juan. Not only does United Mine Workers are not allowed to have a representative in these interviews that are taking place behind closed doors, but the Massey lawyers are able to be with their members during their investigations. It's a complete double standard. I have a level of hypocrisy that's just mind-blowing in terms of protecting the interest of Massey Energy.
Democracy Now! Foundation-funded left gatekeeper media. But we got to get our news where we can get it. And again, good news comes from all sources. Bad news can also come from all sources. But they're so completely correct in getting into the double standard and the cover-up going on. And again, all these things kind of tie in with the memes that have come with the new Obamasiah. We do have other updates and further stories for you to flesh out all of this. More from HuntingtonNews.net, that's out of Huntington, West Virginia, and more from the Associated Press on this latest union and family suing to open federal probe into West Virginia coal mine explosion. Which, of course, perfectly segues into our latest BioWars EnviroHealth updates, connections, consensus, and lighting, by which I mean lightning. So first, as we've now been doing for the last several weeks, and we do have the flashbacks for you to go back through the story week by week, and everything that we've collected and that we've seen pretty much points to the Gulf oil spill as some sort of false flag event with the prior knowledge, the insider trading, the drills, the connections, the compartmentalization, the cover-up, the destruction of the scene, all those things that we see throughout all the other catalyzing catastrophic events are all there. So let's first get the oil spill updates, and let's grab an interesting and important article from just one of the numerous amounts of fine folks I was able to meet at the conspiracy conference a couple weeks ago in California. Dr. Lynn Horowitz, along with Sherry Kane, have a new article, Vatican Official Tied to BP, Goldman Sachs, and Media Censorship in the Oil Fiasco. This gets into, again, all of the connections that we just briefly went over. And of course, let's also mention the Halliburton company negotiating the purchase of the world's largest oil spill cleanup, Boots and Coots, just a few weeks before. Goldman Sachs offloading 44% of their stock in BP 3 weeks before this. Again, we've already talked about insider trading, prior knowledge leading up to a catalyzing catastrophic event. And when you do the numbers and do the percentages on average put options and call options, things preceding events such as these are off the charts. And again, give us a lot to dig into and bring a lot of questions. Something this article from Lynn Horowitz gets into as well, they get into further in their new documentary, Pharma Whores, which I got a copy of, and I'm going to write up a quick review blurb of their new movie, The Showtime Sting of Penn and Teller. They get into, again, all the media connections between Sumner Redstone and Rupert Murdoch and Lloyd Blankfein and all those guys connected to Partnership for New York City, PFNYC. But what we basically want to mention in this article is a guy named Peter D. Sutherland. Besides Blankfein and government Sachs backing stocks in both BP and Halliburton, another red oil-drenched herring is Peter D. Sutherland, the outgoing chairman of BP, also the current non-executive chairman of Goldman Sachs International. And of course, he is the consultator of the extraordinary section of the administration of the patrimony of the Apostolic See. In other words, Sutherland is the chief financier advisor to the Pope. And there you have it. It's all connected, as it always is, my friends. Whether it's gold, oil, and drugs, the real God that, of course, the elites worship. But I was recently rewatching. It's fascinating. It's got so much information packed into it. Empire of the City, Ring of Power, a low-budget documentary that you can grab online. It goes over, it's a big-picture documentary, but it goes over, of course, how D.C. is a nation-state unto itself. That's the military power. The City of London, the nation-state unto itself, that's the money power. And Vatican City, a nation-state unto itself, that's the spiritual power. If they don't get you with one, they'll get you with another. They know they can get you to believe and give your life for at least one of those causes, or in defense of one of those causes, or in fighting for one of those causes. They got you. So again, go get that full article from Dr. Leonard Horowitz, Vatican official tied to BP and Goldman Sachs. Rolling Stone getting into the spill, the scandal, and the president. Again, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. The catastrophes are slightly different, but the game plan and the connections and all the folks gaining the right positions to be able to benefit somehow, just accidentally, coincidentally, always standing to benefit from the chaos they create, seeking to make order out of the chaos. The Guardian getting into Obama's pound of flesh, the $20 billion compensation, and of course, no BP dividends. But more on that from the Microsoft General Electric Corporation that, of course, brings you all your favorite left gatekeeper, Maddow, Olbermann, and all the other garbage that, of course, now, as the left-right paradigm has shifted, it's all shifted now to another fake news network, But I digress. BP agrees to put $20 billion in escrow account. However, from allgov.com, and I had heard a bit of this clip before, but I think it's important that we put it in and on the record. BP hires private security to keep away the media.
As you well know, there's been no shortage of criticism for BP the past 53 days since a busted oil well has been spewing millions of gallons of oil into the Gulf. But the same week the company denied accusations it was shielding its operations from the media, anchor Scott Walker ran into a beachfront barricade of sorts on Grand Isle.
Every security guard here has given the instructions to every single news crew. You can be with outside of 100 yards of the workers on the boom.
And who's saying that? Because nobody can tell me, unless you're the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, you're the Coast Guard, or you're the military, can you tell me where to go on this public beach?
I can tell you where to go because I'm employed to keep this beach safe. And right now, those are my instructions. I have to keep the workers safe as well.
I'm going to go and try and talk to a worker under the tent. Can I do that?
No.
He's on a break.
You are not allowed to interview any workers.
The workers can talk to the media, according to the BP CEO 2 days ago.
We've already heard that one, too.
Yeah. What do you mean you've heard that one? It's true.
The email did not explicitly give you permission to do that.
There are quotes from Doug Suttles that say, no one has been barred access to talk to the media, and that it's a misunderstanding, and the word hasn't trickled down to all the appropriate channels yet. That's what he said 2 days ago. So 2 days later, that word still hasn't trickled down.
It's been briefed to us.
By whom? Who's briefing you all?
That's not important right now.
Well, if you're telling me that I can't do it, it's important that I know who's briefing you.
What's important right now is you cannot talk to the workers. You're interfering with their jobs right now.
If there's somebody on break, I'm interfering with his job?
Yes. You're interfering with his rest. Sir, you cannot talk to anybody there.
Can I yell from a distance?
No. I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. Sir, you cannot interview the workers.
So y'all have certain things y'all are instructed to do.
The workers, but who y'all employed by?
Talent Security.
Well, that's
I can see that. I mean, who's employing Talent Security?
That guy right down there, who's a supervisor, just said if they want to talk to me, they can't. And now you're telling them not to talk to me. Are you all afraid to talk? Do they intimidate you all? Are you afraid you're going to lose your jobs if you speak to the media?
Don't want to. Y'all don't have to say anything. All y'all have to say is I do not want to be interviewed.
Does anybody want to be interviewed?
No.
I just wanted the opportunity to ask to see if anybody wanted to talk to the media. And if you all say no, then I'll walk away. So nobody wants to talk. All right, I got you. Thank you for your time, and thank you for cleaning up the beach.
Now get this. 2 days ago, BP Chief Operations Officer Doug Suttles released a letter to all media outlets saying in part, quote, recent media reports have suggested that individuals involved in the cleanup operation have been prohibited from speaking to the media, and this is simply untrue. BP has not and will not prevent anyone working in the cleanup operation from sharing his or her own experiences or opinions, end quote.
And the cover-up continues, regardless of what the topic is, my friends. So there you have BP hiring private military contractors to keep the crime scene covered up. Again, is this a repeat? Why did New York have a company called Controlled Demolition contracted in mere moments to, of course, destroy the crime scene at Ground Zero after 9/11? But our last note on the oil spill updates from the economiccollapseblog.com, 16 questions about the spill that we deserve answers to. We don't have time to get into all those questions, but again, now week after week after week, we've been giving you all the info that, again, you can dig into, you can sink your teeth into, you can continue to do the research on the spilling. Sinkholes and sickened. Those were our BioWars and EnviroHealth updates last week. But now again, connections, consensus, and lightning. Let's get into the EnviroHealth updates. And amazingly, again, stranger than fiction, what goes on in the real world, whether these are psyops and fake events or real events, it's all about the semiotics. It's all about the symbolism. It's all about the stories that play out. And again, paying attention to all of this and doing the data mining puts together an interesting puzzle. But we don't have all the pieces, but every day we're adding more pieces. And again, this has got to be a reciprocal thing, and that's how we'll learn, and that's how we'll keep adding pieces in. But I'm digressing, my friends. From theregister.co.uk, as well as the Associated Press, lightning smites a 60-foot statue of Jesus in Ohio.
Jesus is on fire. It's amazing. The cross.
As my girlfriend joked, that sounds like that's coming from goth news. Jesus is on fire. Look at the cross. It's amazing. 5.9 earthquake shakes Southern California. 100-plus minor earthquakes rattle Southern California. But from NationalPost.com, consensus on climate change was phony, says IPCC insider. ClimateGate goes on. EPA takes a giant leap into tyranny. More on that from MorphCity.com. U.S. stockpile receives smallpox vaccine. That's, of course, from BioPrepWatch.com. And we already heard from Olbermann once, so we're not going to hear him again. But you can hit the link and hear him slam a Tea Party Senate candidate for voting against water fluoridation. As if that's something good for you, and again, just making fun of some of her admittedly stupid positions. But again, it's all about the name-calling. It's all about the fake left-right paradigm. Johnson & Johnson expands recall of over-the-counter medicines. More on that from Huffington Post. AstraZeneca denied drugs linked to diabetes for years after admitting link to Japanese physicians. More on that from naturalnews.com. And again, AstraZeneca connects to the aforementioned pharma whores from Dr. Leonard Horowitz. Biodetection Technologies Conference kicks off in Arlington, Virginia. Of course, more on that from BioPrepWatch, and that's just another conference going on where the public and private connections are being made, and that's where the lobbying and the threatagenda comes from in the private sector, the private military contractors saying, you're not prepared for this, you're not prepared for cyberspace war, you're not prepared for an I-9-11. Let us get you prepared. And it's the revolving door, and sometimes white hats turn into black hats, and sometimes blue team turns into red team. Our last note on this in BioWars EnviroHealth updates, connections, consensus, and lightning. From dailyfreshnews.info, Albert Pike Camp flooded in Arkansas. I believe we briefly mentioned the floods in Arkansas last week. Unfortunately, there are 16 dead in this case. But again, in watching, as Lauren Coleman would call it, the Twilight language, as we are calling it, the signs and the symbols and the memes, Albert Pike Camp flooded. Albert Pike, if you don't know your morals and dogma, you need to do the research. But the BioWars EnviroHealth updates, again, segues nicely into our next story. And hopefully, all of these stories segue well, and we try and put it together for you. And again, I think we put together a pretty good operation here at MediaMonarchy.com, putting together news and information, public source, open source, all of it together. U.S. identifies vast riches of minerals in Afghanistan. We went over this on the latest New World Next Week with CorbettReport.com, and we do have more updates, and we are going to get into it a little bit more here, but let's take it straight from the New York Times. The United States has discovered nearly $1 trillion in untapped mineral deposits in Afghanistan, far beyond any previously known reserves and enough to fundamentally alter the Afghan economy and perhaps the Afghan war itself, according to senior American government officials. The previously unknown deposits, including huge veins of iron, copper, cobalt, gold, and critical industrial metals like lithium, are so big and include so many minerals that are essential to modern industry that Afghanistan could eventually be transformed into one of the most important mining centers in the world. An internal Pentagon memo, for example, states that Afghanistan could become the Saudi Arabia of lithium, a key raw material in the manufacture of batteries for laptops and Blackberries. And we'll, of course, put in the mention of just the Foxconn mass amounts of suicides going on at those plants in China creating our laptops and Blackberries. But some of the updates that we have all linked up for you, we've got them from all around the world, Telegraph, The Guardian, Politico.com, but from AllGov.com, surprise, surprise, as Afghan war loses support, U.S. discovers huge mineral deposits. And even Danger Room notes, no, the U.S. didn't just discover a trillion-dollar Afghan motherlode. As Steve Watson notes, Afghanistan mineral riches story is war propaganda. Raw story notes, Pentagon report in April only briefly mentioned the $1 trillion in Afghan wealth. Global Post asks if the New York Times, if the old gray lady got played on this Afghanistan mineral story, but in a way that seemingly no one else can. And again, I don't play the game of, you know, who's my favorite radio host, who's my leader. I'm a one-man band. I get the information where I think good, reliable, informational, actionable kind of information is available from. And we like folks like Webster Tarpley for that, for the historical angle, short-range and long-range look that he gives. And that's what he gives in this latest clip from Russia Today. Again, he's a frequent contributor on Russia Today. Afghan Minerals, Uncovered Conspiracy, Tarpley on the Afghan Mineral Wealth, of course, designed to prolong the occupation.
In 2007, apparently more reports were published. They say it sort of collected dust. They sat on this for a few years. So talk about the timing here. I mean, why did this article come out now?
Well, as you correctly say, there's nothing new here. They have discovered nothing. The discoveries, if there were some, were made by the Soviets during the 1980s. There's a World Bank report from 2004 that has all of this stuff. At the time of Karzai coming here to Washington about a month ago with Hillary Clinton meeting, there was a bunch of talk about the mineral wealth of Afghanistan. So it's a very important thing, but it's not new. So the question is, what are we dealing with here? This is a planted story in the New York Times by James Risen, who has chosen to become the stenographer of people in the Pentagon.
Well, why would he do that? I mean, what is in it for the New York Times? I mean, I've heard people say this, but what does the New York Times have anything to do with this? I mean, again, what's in it for them?
The New York Times is, let's say, politically available for all kinds of projects. And in this case, why don't we look at the article? Who is the only top U.S. official mentioned in the article? It's General David Petraeus, the commander of the CENTCOM, the Central Command. Now, people in Washington know that he is an active candidate for president. He is being groomed by the neocon faction of the Republican Party. He was made American Enterprise Institute Man of the Year. He's got Max Boot. He's got the Kagan family. He's got
Frank
Gaffney.
Well, he hasn't come out and said that, but he was quoted as saying, let's get back to this issue, not necessarily Petraeus, but he did say that there is stunning potential
here. Stunning potential. So basically, it's a way of running for president, you might say.
Well, what does that have to do with the...
Don't go into the primaries. What he's saying is, make me president, and we can exploit this wealth, whereas with Obama the wimp, he's going to leave. He's going to start pulling out in 1 year. So it's a way to make up the following appeal.
But wait a second. I mean, we have the Barack Obama in power now, and according to this report, the Pentagon task force has already started sort of reaching out to companies, trying to take advantage of people who have expertise in mining. So I'm not sure that this has too much to do with the administration. Ooh. But Webster, I want to touch on the point that, you know, they found these things in the southern and eastern regions of Afghanistan. This is where a lot of the violence takes place. We can't forget, you know, so number one, there's a war here right now. So bring that into the equation also.
The purpose of the planted story is at the higher level, as you say, is to organize a consensus to keep the war going. It basically says to interest groups in the United States, the corporate world, Wall Street, mineral companies, mining companies, we should stay. And it also makes very clear, if you don't stay, the Chinese will get everything. The Chinese have already gotten the copper mine, and they're going to feast on all this wealth.
China is definitely
bothered. The other level, though, is also the European NATO partner, right? We have the new conservative government in Britain. And Cameron was just in Afghanistan, and he said, you know, we're going to get out of here as soon as we can. In Poland, they've demanded an exit strategy. In Germany, 70% of the people are completely fed up with this. So it's also an appeal to the NATO partners, stay. Remember the use of military contracts in Iraq? France and Germany got none, and the people who joined them got some. So it's basically saying, we'll give you a piece of the action. Be you a U.S. interest group or a NATO partner now thinking of leaving.
So that gets us basically the thumbnail sketch on the Afghan riches propaganda story. But now we're going to have to move quickly, my friends, through the police state updates. Terror drills and rehearsal of misfortune. We have used that headline before, but here we are again. A massive amount, huge number of disaster drills being held throughout America. We're going to get this from standeo.com, from terror attacks and hurricane evacuations to submarine base and nuclear power plant mishaps, bomb blasts, plane crashes, dirty bombs, hazmat spills, earthquakes, medical disasters, and train derailments. America is on high alert. Over the past several weeks to the very present, and as we speak to you now on June 18th, 2010, more than 35 major disaster drills are taking place all around the United States. It makes one wonder what's prompting all of these emergency exercises and planning venues. Was it confusion over Governor Palin's oft-quoted drill, baby drill? No, it's recognition that the feds are leaving ordinary citizens to fend for themselves. Some states aren't happy about this. This gets into, of course, Bobby Jindal and BP and the situation going on, the Katrina 2010 in the Gulf. But going through the scheduled playlist, and of course, as Bush fiddled, Obama golfing, golf versus the Gulf, what we want to fly through and what all I had collected, and grabbing a bunch of these from, again, standeo.com, some of the disaster drills around America and Canada. The list is massive, and let's power through them, my friends. We pay attention to the drills because of all the unfortunate intelligence connections, and it only takes a few times for a drill to go live to make it worthwhile for the New World Order and the agenda to go forward. But that's why we pay attention. There were drills going on of 9/11. The exact same things happened. There were drills going on 7/7, and the exact same things happened. We've already talked about drills going on right before the Gulf oil disaster that is going on. False flag events are the main key of all of these guys. They, them, if you will. You're compartmentalized. Again, someone puts a black hat on, they're on the red team. They may not know they're working for rogue elements inside the intelligence communities. Investigate the drills. Investigate the public, private, military, industrial complex connections and contractors, and you'll see what really goes on. And I think we've touched on this extensively and even briefly on these episodes today. But let's blast through this huge amount of terror and disaster drills being held throughout the United States and Canada and Mexico, for that matter. It is the North American Union coming soon. National Guard training for riot control and mass detentions. That's from shtfplan.com, and that would be shithitsthefanplan.com. Drill helps Chicago area responders prepare for real disaster. And from BioPrep Watch, as well as My Fox Chicago, Chicago Tests, CBRN response teams.
Imagine a bomb blast, a plane crash, a hazardous materials spill, and a CTA derailment all in the same week. That is the setup for a massive joint training exercise. It's set to start Sunday. Lil Chacone is in the newsroom. Lil, who's this for, and what should we look out for?
It's for emergency responders, Robin, and it's designed to stretch them to the breaking point so they can fix problems. problems before they become matters of life and death. It's set to start on Sunday morning at 8 a.m. in Oak Lawn with a simulated jet crash on approach to Midway. Debris and mass casualties will be scattered all over the suburb, but they'll center on a metro station at 95th and Tully. Car and foot traffic will be rerouted. Dozens of local, state, and federal agencies will respond, and seven hospitals will be ready for casualties. Anyone who sees the drill might think it's the real deal.
Obviously, people who live in buildings across the street and stuff, what they look out their window, they will see over 300 first responders, over 50 pieces of fire and emergency equipment. We're going to see people who will be simulated injured.
And that is just for starters. At least seven different scenarios will be playing out in Sunday through Thursday in Oak Lawn, Bridgeview, Elk Grove Village, Bensonville, and in Chicago. In Chicago, the scenarios will be at Soldier Field and on a stretch of CTA track at 15th Street. Now, there are bound to be traffic tie-ups and frightening scenes of survivors and victims. So if you see something like that, remember this story before you dial 911. Back to you, Robin.
All right. Thanks so much, Lillian. We will be prepared. But I'm wondering, though, how many people and where are they going to get the volunteers to play, you know, people that are injured and dead?
There's going to be at least 1,500 people taking part in this exercise. They're getting volunteers from the Great Lakes Naval Base, and the volunteers will be, you know, bandaged and bloodied and looking worse for the wear. The mannequins will play the dead people, but they will be dressed up thanks to the Salvation Army stores.
Okay, yeah, because playing a dead person, it's supposed to be very hot this weekend. Any concern that this simulation might turn into an actual emergency?
No, they're going to play this out over 5 days. I'm sure all the volunteers will be fed and watered.
Okay, thanks so much, Olympico.
Is there any possibility this could turn into a real emergency? Well, again, the drills are used to train the people to be used to the military performing law enforcement operations, and it gets the military and your state, local, city, it gets them all together. It gets them acclimated to the idea that everything involves a federal militaristic response. And again, it gets you used to the idea that when the SHTF, as we just mentioned, you won't freak out because you've already been acclimated to it, both in your community and on your media box. Local state workers to drill disaster in Charleston, South Carolina. Seattle-based ERTI teams up with the Marianas Islands for a 36-hour terror attack drill. Joint Users Interoperability Communications Exercise, JUICE, if you're nasty. Terror drills keep Franklin, Pennsylvania hospital sharp. That's from publicopiniononline.com. Emergency personnel and military test preparedness in 3-day Reno, Nevada event. That's from mynews4.com. Medical disaster drill being held in downtown Erie, Pennsylvania. That's on goerie.com. Rapid response task force drill at Ford Park in Texas. That's from theexaminer.com. Officials practice hurricane routes near Dallas, Texas. That's from KilgoreNewsHerald.com. And from KLTV, half-full school bus, car, an 18-wheeler with radioactive material in Tyler, Texas.
Smith County emergency management crews geared up for a full-scale disaster today in Lyndale.
Any radiation coming off any material that did spill, which we don't think happened at this time, can be shielded with something as light as a piece of paper.
This emergency drill involved a half-full school bus, a car, and an 18-wheeler carrying radioactive material. Remember, this is just a drill. A total of 25 emergency response teams were present for the mock accident, and although it rained heavily during the drill, the crews are still happy with the exercise.
We've set up a unified command. We've worked together on this drill. We've taken care of the issues, the problems, as a collective team, and that's what it's all about.
And that's what it's all about, acclimating the public. County disaster drill tests emergency workers in Colorado. That's from CenterPostDispatch.com. Massive emergency drill could lead to traffic mess near Chicago. I believe we already referenced that, but there's some more from SouthTownStar.com. North Carolina emergency response teams converge on Wilson Bay disaster drill. That's from JDNews.com. Ohio emergency drill tests local agencies' response. That's from NewsAndSentinel.com. Anderson area agencies prepare for emergency drills in South Carolina. That's from WTNH. Santa Barbara, California's Westmont to host emergency drill. That's from Independent.com. Disaster week drills begin in Chicagoland. More on that from NBCChicago.com. Emergency drill at Connecticut submarine base. That's from WTNH.com. Emergency drill patients taken to Vancouver Washington Hospital. That's from Columbia.com. Mock crash real test in Portland, Maine. That's from PressHerald.com. Marathon Petroleum postpones emergency drill in Washington. More on that from SWCBulletin.com. Emergency drill set for Danbury, Connecticut Hospital. That's from NewsTimes.com. Medford, Oregon airport drill gives teams practice. They need practice. Acclimating you, acclimating everyone. Sometimes they let you even play act. Sometimes they'll have you say things like, "I'm an American. Please don't put me in a camp." But mostly these drills, in addition to being wasteful, are the psyop. A lot of this seems intimately connected and tied in to the previous puppet administration and all of their terror drills, but it still goes on and on and on. MSU drill underway for hazmat, fire, and bombs in Missouri. That's from OzarksFirst.com. North Carolina drill test Coast Guard under stress. That's from DailyAdvance.com. SWAT teams drill at Columbia College in California. That's from MyMotherload.com. Preparing for the worst at Michigan Water Plant. That's from WWMT.com. ECU conducts full-scale campus shooter drill in North Carolina. That's on Reflector.com. Washington holds massive earthquake drill, PNWLocalNews.com. Nuclear plant emergency drill canceled after power outage in Michigan. That's from MonroeNews.com. UW Medical Center holds what-if situation drill in California. That's from DailyUW.com. East hosts Red Cross emergency drill in New York. That's on Patch.com. Bristol, Connecticut disaster drill exploding chemicals. That's on thecurrent.com. Brown Printing holds large-scale emergency drill in Minnesota. That's from Waseca County News.com. Mangling the name again. All the links are available for you. Appalachian State University in North Carolina holds full-scale emergency drill. That's on JournalNow.com. UW Madison and several other agencies hold emergency response drill. NBC15.com. And a disaster drill in Providence, Rhode Island. More on that from WPRI.com.
First responders meet a gruesome train scene in Providence today, all part of a practice drill preparing officials for when a real accident does happen. Eyewitness News at the practice drill site this afternoon off Elmwood Ave across from Roger Williams Park. The scenario was a serious train collision. Amtrak ran the simulation today with the Providence Emergency Management Agency to give emergency crews practice.
This is training that Amtrak provides to all types of emergency response agencies in order to get them familiar with our equipment should an incident occur.
And about 60 people participated in today's mass casualty practice drill from cities all around the Providence metro area, stretching from Johnston to West Warwick.
And then Expedia's Toronto office runs their yearly disaster drill. More on that from itworldcanada.com.
Sure, absolutely. We conducted a disruptive live fire exercise, unannounced, surprise drill late last year. We launched that exercise exercise with an email to the head of development for Expedia.ca saying, this is your annual drill. Your office is now closed. Access is denied. Please activate your continuity plan and continue your operations in emergency mode. And they received that at night. We ran it overnight and throughout the rest of the business day and terminated at the close of the next day. There's a number of different solutions. We have VPN access into our corporate data center and into the live site, so we can prop code, we can do merchandising, we can affect the live site itself, as well as do email and post our documents and generally run the business. We have multiple ways to do both, and we back up our Toronto office with another office close by, so there's PCs available in case they need them. And we also have command center setups with hotel partners where we can spin up an emergency work area and have people work from there. Technology challenges, which you don't find unless you actually exercise disruptively by doing the real thing rather than just do a tabletop or review your plans. We found, for example, that there are applications that might work well from one VPN solution but not necessarily another. So it's very important to test all of the things that need to get done as far as business process and test them redundantly.
Ottawa holds G20 protest-related emergency drill. And again, we remind you, the G8 G20 coming up basically next week in Toronto. Of course, they have been drilling massively. The intelligence and military connections will be covered quite completely there in Toronto in the days and weeks to come. They've spent more money on security for the couple of days of the elites than they spent in weeks for the already we'd gone over the police state settings for their recent Olympics. Ottawa holds G20 protest related emergency drill. That's from thestar.com. And one of the latest, as we add all to these massive amounts of terror drills, 35 plus going on all around the last few and even current days. NORAD plans exercise flights over three states and D.C. That's Maryland, Virginia, and West Virginia, and the District of Criminals. That was happening this morning. More on that from dailypress.com. 2nd Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment conducting military exercises June 15th through the 19th. That's from hometownclipper.com, and that is as we speak. Again, we are soaking in military PSYOP terror drills going on. Envelopes with white powder sent to federal buildings in Washington, Idaho, and Utah. More on that from king5.com. And it gets stranger. As we've talked about, interesting and strange folks doing strange things for strange reasons. As we covered, of course, the guy hunting Osama bin Laden in Pakistan as if he were still alive. We have another couple of strange cases, again, always connected to the military, whether you're a McVeigh or an Oswald or any of it. Armed couple detained outside MacDill Air Force Base, which is the home of CENTCOM in Florida.
They've got the entire south end of MacDill Air Force Base shut down right now. This is the Bayshore entrance gate. Apparently, they had a light blue-colored SUV that pulled into the gate and was stopped by security officers. And at that point, we don't know exactly what happened, but they have started unloading everything out of that SUV, including a number of what appear to be sniper rifles, large ammunition, military paraphernalia, clothing, and we're waiting right now for some more word from MacDill Air Force Base to what all this means and why this vehicle was stopped here at the main entrance gate.
Did it try to get through the gate?
It does not appear that it tried to ram the gate or anything like that, but we don't know exactly what happened when it approached the gate, why it was stopped, why it wasn't allowed to continue on in. All we can say is that for some reason they did stop this vehicle and found something suspicious, and they actually had a robot and some bomb squad type technicians approached the vehicle a couple hours ago. They circled the vehicle and they've been looking at it ever since.
Were there two men in it?
I don't have official word on that. I've heard reports of that, but don't have that confirmed yet.
So you don't know if they've taken any people out of the car or held them for questioning or anything?
Yeah, we talked to one of the military police detectives here on scene. He could provide us no information. He said, just wait. We've got a military spokesperson on the way out to us, and we're waiting for official word on all that.
Is MacDill right in Tampa?
MacDill is on the very southern tip of Tampa. In fact, it borders up against the city limits of Tampa, and Tampa police were actually working, diverting traffic away from this particular entrance gate. So yes, it is the very southern tip of Tampa, and also we can tell you that there are apparently, this is a special week at MacDill Air Force Base. Some of the military personnel tell us that there are some high-ranking officials on base this week. They had a big golf tournament earlier today, so what that may have to do with all this, obviously some increased security.
Wonder what that may have to do connected with the big wigs and their golf meetings. It's been a while since we've mentioned that Warren Buffett's golf meeting in the morning of 9/11, where people like Ann Tatlock of Fiduciary Trust were safely away at Offutt Air Force Base, where, of course, Bush would land later in the day, and she was able to watch her office get hit by a plane on the morning of 9/11 while she was safe with the banksters and gangsters. But that's a digression, because connected intimately to that strange case is this strange case of a man arrested with a landmine and grenades near Fort Gordon, Georgia.
So we have breaking news out of Fort Gordon. Only on 12, a civilian has been detained this evening on the Post after officers found a vehicle with explosives inside. This news comes to us following a tip from WGAC's Austin Rhodes. Officials at Fort Gordon tell me it did not happen at one of the gates. Instead, military police approached the car that was parked on Post and found it to be suspicious. The FBI and the ATF have been called in to investigate. Sources say the explosives were disposed of. The civilian's identity has not been released yet.
Now, incidentally, an AWOL service member tried to enter MacDill Air Force Base in Tampa just last night with a car full of military-style gear and weapons. Officials at MacDill say the man and a woman also in the car had three rifles, three handguns, and loads of ammunition in their SUV. An official says there's no indication the incident at MacDill was an act of terrorism, but the man and woman are still being questioned.
Now, it's not clear at this point if the incident at MacDill is related to today's arrest at Fort Gordon. Again, only on 12 tonight, a civilian arrested at Fort Gordon with explosives in his vehicle. Both the FBI and the ATF are investigating, and tonight, sources at the fort are not releasing the suspect's name. Be sure to stay with News 12 as we continue following this breaking news story.
And we, of course, are following all the breaking news stories connected to the police state updates and the massive, massive amounts of terror drills and sinister connections and intelligence fingerprints that we can track here in the world. Quickly closing up our police state updates, terror drills, and the rehearsal of misfortune. Cop punches 17-year-old girl in the face, and girl initially charged with assaulting a cop. However, the update is that the Seattle officer under fire for punching girl in the face. More on that from KOMO-TV out of Seattle, as well as Raw Story. Gordon Duff on MyCatBirdSeat.com getting into the aforementioned analogy of the fox in the hen house, asking if we can trust Israeli security companies. That's a big, huge question to drop and then not really dive into, but we're pretty much running out of time on this episode 174. MSNBC, again, cover-up of manifestly provable depopulation plan going on. We've also got Professor Boyle saying that only global governance can save us from a century of chaos. Delaware DMV unveils new secure ID cards. And finally, the Memphis mayor looks south of the border for economic opportunities.
Memphis Mayor A.C. Wharton is back tonight from his trip to Mexico. He spent 2 days meeting with Mexican leaders on how to improve trade. Eyewitness News reporter Jenny DiPrizio talked with the mayor today about why he went and where he went and what he accomplished. Jenny?
Cameron, Wharton says he's appointed a team to immediately start working with a group in Mexico. The big picture, bringing more jobs to Memphis.
Memphis is America's distribution hub with planes and trains and trucks. Mayor A.C. Wharton hopes he can turn the Bluff City into
maybe making Memphis, Tennessee, the one-stop shop where Mexican products come into here. We take them and handle them, and we're America's distribution center. We get them out to the rest of the United States.
Mexico is this country's second largest trading partner. Even the planned I-69 international highway that will run from Canada to Mexico will run right through Memphis.
This could become the break point. This could become one of the brains, the central points of the I-69 commerce. So this is why Memphis is a logical place.
At Latino Memphis, those in the Hispanic community support Wharton.
We don't see this issue as an issue impacting Hispanics. We see this as an issue about impacting the whole community. You know, I mean, he could have gone to Chile, for that matter, or to China.
In some parts of the country, anti-immigration sentiments are high. So is Wharton's push for Mexican trade a way to capitalize on that?
It's a matter of our trying to take advantage of what's going on in Arizona. We're simply showing them that we are sensitive to every group in our town.
I think all dollars are green. And when you talk about economic development, you know, people see beyond immigration and race and color. You know, they just want a piece of the pie.
Now, Wharton says he expects to sign an agreement called the 3Ms. It stands for Memphis, Monterey, and Montreal. Those are the three cities that the superhighway will run through. Of course, we are still waiting on details on just what that agreement is all about. In the studio, Jenny DiPrizio, ABC 24 Eyewitness News.
All right, Jenny, Mayor Wharton went to Mexico with members of the Chamber of Commerce and leaders of several of the largest companies in Memphis, including FedEx and Medtronic. No word on when they'll be going back.
In one little simple regional story, you've got a lot of the game plan laid out and connected, where essentially there you have that news organization as well as the mayor of Memphis admitting, yes, there's the NAFTA superhighway and it's going to go all the way down. And it's going to be connected to, of course, what we see with the national ID card, the worker's ID card, the biometric identification card. All of this connects. They said the 3Ms. We've also got the SPP. Call it what you want. The plans are there. Quickly now from AllGov, we ask, are drones coming to U.S. skies? FAA under pressure to open the U.S. skies to drones. It likely is just a matter of time before unmanned aircraft, including the type being used in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, are flying over America's friendly skies. State and federal officials, especially the Department of Homeland Stupidity, are pressuring the FAA to allow pilotless planes of all sizes to move through U.S. airspace in order to carry out a variety of missions. Border Patrol, of course, being just one. And all of these stories, again, as we always say, are intimately connected. Quickly now, we'll close out the show with a little bit of history mystery. FBI releases 2,352 pages on Ted Kennedy documenting sex and threats. Marilyn Monroe sex parties, death threats, and Richard Nixon secret Ted Kennedy documents revealed.
Kennedy files kept secret for decades and now declassified. Thousands of pages, most of them about death threats and extortion attempts against Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy. Good evening, everyone. Those threats came literally from all directions. The KKK, the mob, even individual people. We have team coverage for you tonight, beginning with Janet Wu, and a first look at the life of a man under intense scrutiny and security throughout his long public career.
Threats that plagued the late senator for his entire adult life consumes the vast majority of his FBI dossier. They were haunting, constant, and their intensity only picked up after Chappaquiddick and the 1968 assassination of his brother, Robert Kennedy, at a Los Angeles hotel. Within days, an internal FBI memo to J. Edgar Hoover pleaded, please make sure that Ted Kennedy gets all the protection he needs. We are down to one Kennedy.
For the last 50 years of Ted Kennedy's life, he regularly had threats made on his life. And I think people don't know and understand that. You would never know it from him.
On June 11th, 1 week after RFK's assassination, the Secret Service asked for stepped-up protection. The kind of mind that thinks about political assassinations is likely to find the last Kennedy son particularly alluring. And then this threat from an unnamed white Atlanta man who said KKK, Kennedy, King, Kennedy. Get it? KKK. Now there is only one to go. Teddy.
Ted Kennedy must have read many of these crossing his desk, and particularly after the deaths of his brothers. You can see why he more or less engaged in what we consider aberrant social behavior, turned to the bottle and other things to, you know, relieve the constant stress. His life was constantly under threat.
On top of the threats, there are more lurid scandals, including the one that Kennedy and brother-in-law Peter Lawford were involved in sex parties at a New York City hotel in mid-1960s. Frank Sinatra and Marilyn Monroe are also mentioned as being in on mob threats against Ted Kennedy. A confidential source told the FBI the mafia was unhappy about then-Attorney General Bobby Kennedy's investigations, so they wanted to put both Bobby and Ted Kennedy in compromising positions.
And the file ends when he makes it completely clear he will never run for president.
And what's interesting from my perspective is what's not there. Where are the Nixon White House documents or memos? They were obsessed with Ted Kennedy, particularly over the Chappaquiddick incidents, and you don't see any of that here. My question is, well, why not?
Another surprising detail in Kennedy's FBI file, one threat came from the son of the infamous Chicago mobster Al Capone. Sonny Capone was 50 years old at the time. The FBI's notes say he appeared intoxicated when he called in a death threat against Kennedy from a Florida restaurant. Janet Wu, News Center 5.
And that's how we're going to close out this episode 174 of MediaMonarchy.com. Of course, recording from home in the studios of Media Monarchy. PRA under construction. Quickly, though, I forgot last week, ran out of time to mention our creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com. Of course, I keep track of the interesting visitors to the website. We had U.S. Government, GSA, LSA, Reg 9. We had Atlantic Media Company, Michigan Legislative Council, the Yale Hospital via WhatReallyHappened.com, Boeing out of Everett, Washington, the DEA out of Alexandria, Virginia, Grandma's Cookies out of Clarksburg, West Virginia, the Navy Network Information Center out of Virginia Beach, Virginia, and Oceanside, California, and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office out of Alexandria, Virginia. We had FEMA out of Denton, Texas, a couple of times, Googling Minot Air Force Base ICBM map. We also had the Naval Ocean System Center, the Iowa Annual Conference of United Methodist Church. All that and so much more, my friends, visiting MediaMonarchy.com. If they are, you should too. And that's how it's going to go. All the things I've said, I mean, and I thank you for all your help. And I appreciate it. Get in touch with me, spread the word, share the show, and we'll keep getting stronger. Amazingly enough, my friends, next week is the 175th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. I couldn't do it without you. My name is James Evan Pilato. I am the host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, reminding you, as always, to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, the New World Network video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether you went on with the diary, or whether you did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.